Okay, so welcome everybody. Once again, thank you, Dr. Berger, for volunteering of his time and being so, make it so easy for me. And without further ado, Dr. Berger.
Okay, this is a challenging topic because there are powerful arguments on both sides of this question. And the question is the one that I formulated on top, but the fuller unpacking of that question is the one that I'm sure you're familiar with, namely, did the Jews, Israelites, whatever you want to call them, worship something other than the God of Israel when they bowed down and sacrificed to the Ego? And as I said, I think there are really strong arguments on both sides of this question. And we'll spend the next three quarters of an hour trying to look at those arguments. And at the end of the evening, you'll decide what you think. Let's start out just looking at the few psukim at the beginning of Perek Lamed Bet of Shmot, which you have in the Tanakh in front of you. These are psukim that you all know without opening the book, but you can open it if you want. Vayar ha'am, ki voshesh Moshe l'redes min ha'har, vayikohel ha'am al haron, vayamu elav kuma seylonu elohim asher yelchul lefaneinu, it's one pasuk actually, and it's replete with problems, especially in light of what happens later on. So let's look first at the argument for the Chet HaEgel as the worship of an alternative god or gods. That makes this Avodah Zorah in the fullest sense. First of all, the expression that they said, I should actually read just another verse that you're also perfectly well familiar with, and that's Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Dalet.
What
Perek Lamed Bet of Shmot.
Lamed
Bet of Shmot. Lamed Beis. I read Pasuk Aleph. Let's go to Pasuk Aleph. The second half of it. It says, Vayomru, Eile Elohecha Yisrael, Asher Elucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Without the counter evidence, this seems like a very clear indication that they regarded the Egel as a divinity. That's what Elohecha usually means. And what we do with the plural, we'll see in a moment, or at least we'll see options in a moment. But that's a verse that just on the face of it seems to affirm that the Egel is God, who took them out of the land of Egypt. Who took them out of the land of Egypt, if not God? I know you can say Moshe. The plural is disconcerting. It sounds like polytheistic language, although the Egel, even if they saw it as a part of a group of deities, is only one God. So this is a peculiar plural verb. Now, as you all know, in Sefer Melachim, after Yeravam's revolt, he wants to prevent Jews from going to Jerusalem, and so he says he builds constructs these agalim, which are set up in two different cities, and they say, Hine, not Eile, but Hine Elohecha Yisrael, Asher Elucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Remember that there were two agalim, so the plural is a little bit more straightforward over there, maybe. Now, I should say, almost as an aside, but it's worth keeping in mind. If you look at the source that I reproduced for you on the third page of this handout, from Breshit Chof Yud Gimel, you notice that there is a verse that says, that provides a plural verb with the word Elohim, meaning the God of Israel, said by a very good Jew named Avraham Avinu. It's perfectly clear that Avraham is not a polytheist, and yet he is prepared to use a plural verb with Elohim. Now he's speaking to a polytheist, but I don't know if that makes it better or worse. But you see that it says Vayihi kasher hisu osi Elohim mibeis avi, not hisa but hisu. So it's not unheard of for a plural verb to be used with the noun Elohim when Elohim is the God of Israel, without any polytheistic implications. The word Elohim is a plural in the first place, maybe because it's a term indicating that God contains a whole constellation of powers. That's one of the explanations, although Elohim could be in the plural simply as a plural of majesty, which operates with nouns as well as verbs. For example, Diber Itanu Ha'ish, I'm sorry, Diber Ha'ish Adonai Ha'aretz Itanu Kashos. They're talking about Yosef, who is a singular, and is a singular verb. But the noun is a plural noun. Adonai Haaretz, not Adon Haaretz, because you can have such a noun simply as a sign of majesty. The word Be'alim appears in the Tanakh, not only in rabbinic texts, in the plural, for a singular owner or a master, in Be'alav Imo Lo Yishalem, right? So that I'm afraid to deal with here, because Vavonosai Haravim, I have spent too much time on Jewish-Christian debates. So if I start talking about Nasadam et Salmeinu, I probably won't get to the Chet HaEgel. So let's leave that aside. But of course, that's an issue with a verb that caused much discussion. But in any case, the plural noun for God may involve some sense of plurality in the sense of he is containing all sorts of powers. Maybe that accounts for the occasional plural verb. Now,
I'm a little confused. They say, I say, Lano Elohim Asher Yelchu, what's it, Yelchu Yelchu?
Yelchu.
Yelchu Lufanen, Kizem Moshe Ha'ish Lo Yadanamo. Maybe they mean a secular Elohim, he judges me by the evidence we say ego shall Elohim. So maybe they're not looking for God, they're looking for a man, Kizem Moshe Ha'ish Lo Yadanamo Oyelo. If you say Elohim is Kodesh, what has that got to do with the second?
So if you're confused, then you're in and since you said what both Ibn Ezra and the Ramban say, and others, which we will get to, then it's not such a chisaron to be confused. But that is that's the other position, which we will get to. It could indeed, according to some important Mefarshim, it is.
They want a leader.
And that's what we will get to, yes, indeed. First I want to set up the argument for it being another deity as convincingly as I can. Nehemiah, and you will see that right on top of the pasuk from Bereishis that you just looked at, you actually have a singular version of this text. V'lo azavtam, it says about God that he's thanking God for his kindness to Israel. Af ki asu lohem egel masecha vayomru ze elohecha asher he'elcho mimisroim vayasu ne'otzos gidolos. So here you have a pasuk that actually presents this in the singular, which can go either way in terms of the issue that we're addressing. There is a passage in Tehillim, which I reproduced for you, at the on the bottom of the second page of the handout, which also seems to suggest strongly that this is a substitute for God, and not Dafka for Moshe. Let's look at these psukim. This is a periklim that kind of gives a summary of the history of Israel, and it gets to things that are not so nice. Yasu egel b'chorev vayishtachavu lemaseicha. Okay. Vayomiru es kivodam b'savnis shor ochel esev. That looks like they have substituted for God. Kivodam would appear at first. I mean, certainly the one's initial instinct is that this means that they betrayed the God, or they substituted for God an ox, whatever it is, ochel esev. And this is reinforced by the next verse. Shachachu kel moshiyam oseh gedolos b'mitzroyim niflos beretzcha noros hayam suf. This is what God did for them. Vayomer lahashmidam, he was going to destroy them. Lulei Moshe v'chiro amad b'peretz lefanov l'hashiv chamoso mei hashchis. So once again we have a verse that really seems to militate in favor of a view that this was the worship of an alternate god. The very phrases vayishtachavu lo vayizbuchu lo that we find regarding the egel are terms that don't quite look right if this was just a substitute for Moses, because presumably they didn't sacrifice or bow down to him. Now, in Chazal, we have two views in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Samech Gimel Amud Aleph, which I did not reproduce for you, both of which, I think, seem to point in the direction of the view that this was the worship of an alternative deity or deities. The first opinion says, Ilmolei vav deheelucha nischayvu rishayhem shel Yisrael kiloya. If not for the fact that there is a vav in heelucha, that is, if not for the fact that it's a plural verb, the Jews would have been condemned to destruction, to utter destruction. What does that mean? It means, as Rashi says, it seems that is, I mean, it's clear from the continuation of the Gemara also, that it means that at least they were worshipping the true God along with this thing. And the Gemara objects to this, that this is not such a wonderful limud zechus, because we know that Hamashateif Shem Shamayim B'davar Acher, somebody who combines the name of God with something else, Ne'ekar Min Ha'olam, is uprooted from the world. So what does it mean that if they hadn't said it in the plural, they would have been worthy of destruction? They're worthy of destruction this way too. So the other opinion cited is the one that Rashi cites in his Perush here, that on Eile Elohecha Yisrael, he says, I didn't reproduce that in the handout, he says, Ivu Lohem Elohos Harbe. They desired multiple deities. So all of this material seems to militate in favor of the view, both in with from biblical evidence and from this Gemara in Sanhedrin, that we are dealing here with the fullest kind of avodah zarah, that is the worship of another deity other than the God of Israel. On the other hand, as Dr. Gross pointed out, there are counterarguments, and there are powerful counterarguments. To look at them, I'd like to actually look at the texts, the relatively lengthy texts that I reproduced here from Ibn Ezra and the Ramban. Before we look at them, I just want to say something preliminarily. Ibn Ezra, and less prominently Ramban, are using the term Avodah Zarah here to mean worship of a god other than the God of Israel. If you don't do that, then it's not Avodah Zarah for the purpose of this discourse. It doesn't mean that it's not Avodah Zarah in the halachic sense of the term Avodah Zarah, which is I won't say a wholly other question, but it's another question. And that's, if we have time at the end, we'll take a look at the Rambam, which is the last thing on the handout, where he discusses his view that what he calls Ikar Avodah Zarah isn't even the worship of an alternative deity. It's the worship of a kind of an unauthorized entity. But I think it's important that I just say that, because you're going to see Ibn Ezra using the word Avodah Zarah. This isn't Avodah Zarah. And you say to yourself that just because it's not the God of Israel doesn't necessarily mean it's not Avodah Zarah in the halachic sense, and it indeed doesn't mean that. So let's look at least some sections of this Ibn Ezra. Starting with the second line, Chalila, Chalila. So, Ibn Ezra tells us, Chalila, Chalila, she'asa Aaron avodah zarah. God forbid that Aaron should have made an avodah zarah in the sense that I just defined it, the worship of a god other than the God of Israel, an alternative god. Gam Yisrael lo bikshu avodah zarah. So what was their issue here? Rak chashvu shemes Moshe. They thought Moses had died. Shehisi'um miyam suf kasher peresh. Ki ra'u sha'amon eno yored b'har Sinai. U'moshe hisakev shomar bo'im yal. Moshe was up on Har Sinai. They saw that the man wasn't falling there. So he had nothing to eat. And he was there for 40 days. Nobody can live that long without eating. He didn't say when he'd come back. We're all used to this business that he told them that they'd be back in 40 days, and they made a miscalculation. Ibn Ezra doesn't operate with that assumption. There's no place in the Torah that says that Moshe told them when he'd come back. He didn't tell them when they'd come back. And he himself didn't know. Gamu lo yada. Moshe himself didn't know when he'd come back. So he must have been dead, because you have to be dead if you spent 40 days on top of a mountain without food. So they're looking for a substitute for Moshe. So he's got to explain the word Elohim. They wanted an Elohim. So Ibn Ezra says something that could take us forever to try to discuss. I'm not going to, in part because I'm not sure I understand it myself. Umilas Elohim, kavod chone b'tzuras kviyah. The glory that is resting in the form of a body. Now, commentators on Ibn Ezra assume that kavod here means not God, but something like an angelic presence, which is actually resting in the Egel. and this was done, he says, Lichvod Hashem. Hine Lichvod Hashem Na'asa. And that's why Aaron said, Chag Lashem Mochar, which is a powerful argument against the first position. He says, Chag Lashem Mochar. Moreover, he says, when Moshe challenged Aaron and asked how he could have done all of this, Aaron answered, Atayodata Esom Ki Birahu, Ki Ani Lo Asisi Ralahem. I'm not the one who did bad things to them. They did it to themselves, because they only asked Asher Yelech Lifnehem and Lichvod Hashem Asisiv. But he goes on to say that there were some bad apples. There was the Erev Rav and whatever, and they're the ones who turns this into a real Avodah Zarah. And he points out, if you look towards the end of the next paragraph, the one that begins Va'al Tismach, Ibn Ezra argues that the only people who worshipped the Egel as for the sake of Avodah Zorah, who said Eile Elohecha Yisrael, or thought that, Lo hayu rak shlosha salafim, because only 3,000 were killed by the Levim. And he assumes that that was the totality of the sinners. And they are a tiny percentage, he says, of the entire Machaneh. And he brings some proof that the rhetoric of the Tanakh blames the whole people for the acts of a few. So this is Ibn Ezra's argument that this was not an alternative deity. Number one, it says Chag Lashem. Well, no, that's number one. Number one is they said Kizem Moshe Ha'ish. That's what they're trying to replace. Number two is Aaron said Chag Lashem Machar, and that means that they thought that they would be worshiping the God of Israel through this entity. How do you deal with the El Elohech Yisrael the way he does regarding a minority? And the Ramban makes these arguments with even greater vigor. You look at the Ramban. He begins by citing Rashi, who cites that Gemara that I mentioned earlier, that they sought many gods. But the Ramban says this is not right. English ono mechuvan at the end of the first paragraph. Avol, he says, hakasuv hazeh mafteach lidas nochon inyan ha'egel. Umachsheves oso. Because he says, we know. It says, kizeh Moshe ha'ish, right? And we know, it is known, biyodua, Shaloha yu Yisrael sfurim shemoshe hu ha'elokim, v'shehu b'chocho asolahem osos v'ham ofsim. They didn't think Moses was God. U'matam sheyomru, kevan shalach Moshe mimenu, na'aseh Elohim. Because Moses left, we want to make a God, literally a God. V'o, ki b'feirush amru, Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu, lo sheyunos nin lahem chayim ba'olam hazeh ba'olam haba. They didn't. We want an Elohim who's gonna lead us. If it's really a God, the Ramban would expect them to have said something stronger. Though I have to say that this is not the strongest of his arguments, at least in my estimation. In any event, when we turn to the next to the top of the next page, the second line. He says, that's why they said, Moshe ha'ish asher ha'elonu v'lo ha'keil asher ha'elon. Because what they want is a man of God, not God himself. He goes on to say that Aharon, I won't read the text in its fullness, he says that Aharon's excuse also doesn't make sense. If they were talking about a real alternate deity. Because why did Aaron tell Moshe, don't get angry at me? All I did They asked me for a god, and all I did was make it for them. This may not be an entirely fair summary of what the verses say, but that's how the Ramban presents it. What kind of excuse is this? Line four of the paragraph beginning V'chein Tuchal. V'hu kemosif al chataso pesha. He's making things worse. She'omer ki hein bikshu mimenu avodah zarah va'asa olahem v'yadav. So why shouldn't Moshe be angry? He should be even angrier. But rather, he says, it's as I said, I did this as a substitute for you. And the Ramban then provides another interesting proof. He said, they didn't know if you were going to come back. And they needed somebody who would show them the way. You want to know how you can demonstrate that they did not, in fact, regard the Egel as a deity, but really as just a substitute for Moshe? What happened when Moshe came back? He breaks the luchos. He gives them, he makes them drink the water. He gets the Levium together. And they kill the sinners. Is there a whisper of resistance? There's no resistance. Moshe came down, and once he came down, the whole motivation for what they did was undone. But the Ramban says this would make no sense if they thought that this was a god that they were worshiping. People don't give up their gods so easily. So this underscores the understanding that this was simply a substitute for Moshe. Now, yes.
It strikes me that the water that Moshe made them drink is similar to the May Sota.
It is indeed.
But in the case of the Sota, Sota drinks it willingly because she believes her innocence. She believes herself to be innocent. Whereas in here you're saying that they drank it because they knew their guilt.
Is it really the case that the Sota drinks it because she's convinced of her innocence?
Yeah, she was guilty. If she admits her guilt, she gets out of the ceremony.
Yeah, all right. That is true. She also might drink it because she doesn't believe it's going to work. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's really. First of all, the Torah Shabbal Peh says what you just said. That's true. But if she admits it, she is still putting herself in a very very bad position. And if she's not such a believer that this thing is going to work, she drink it willingly anyway. I should add in connection with the position, yes.
I guess this brings up the other possibility that it's replaced with the Moshe. So why is the punishment so great if they weren't? This begs that question.
You can ask that also. You're certainly right that the rhetoric here, especially of Ibn Ezra, downplays the severity of the sin to a point where you can actually start wondering why the punishment was as severe as it was. And you can reasonably argue that the severity of the punishment, not only immediately, but for generations to come, is an argument in favor of the alternative God reading. However, the worship of an image that they had no business regarding as a representation of Moshe or as a kind of a resting place for God, which is another option, is still Avodah Zarah. They're not using the word Avodah Zarah, But in halachic terms, as I indicated before, this avodah zara, worshiping, bowing to, and sacrificing to an entity, physical entity, that God did not authorize you to worship, is avodah zara in halachic terms. So it is still a very serious transgression. I should add, by the way, that some people who see this as not the worship of an alternative deity don't necessarily see it only as a substitute for Moshe, but see it as a podium for the invisible God of Israel. We do have some images of pagan deities sitting on a bull. Since the God of Israel was not visible, there one way of seeing the eagle, this is speculative, is the same way that you would see the authorized images called kruvim, upon which God's presence rests. God is Yoshev HaKruvim, but God is invisible. So it's conceivable that this is another way to understand their conception of what was going on here, that they were worshiping the invisible God who is sitting on this entity. That's another limud zchus. Now, yes.
What role did the bull play in Egyptian?
I will confess that as far as I know, these depictions of bulls are more in a Canaanite sort of religions than in Egypt. I think, but I'm not that I don't say with authority.
Yecheskel's vision of the Menorah has a bull.
That's right.
Sure, let's see.
That's right. There is an interesting effort to deal with the passage in Tehillim that we looked at before. You might decide that it's a dochak. Maybe it is, but Bechor Shor, you'll see the words Bechor. I'm not such an expert at printing things up, so you'll see the word Bechor Shor at the very bottom of page 2, and then what Bechor Shor actually says is at the top of page 3. Asay lano Elohim is a shofet v'dayan, manhig v'dabor. We've just dealt with that in detail. We've done with that in detail also. Middle of line 3. Umasha Amar David Vayomiru Kivodon Bisavnis Shoro Chelesev. Hochi Ka'amar. This is what it means. Shehimiru Kivodon. Who is Kivodon? Moshe Shosolo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nisim Niflo Sal Yodo. All right. He simply takes the bull by the horns and says that, okay, Kavod doesn't mean God. Kavod also means Moshe. You can decide whether you're whether you like this or not. And even if this is true, the psalmist could consider even this unauthorized form of worship to be a betrayal of God, even if you're not happy with the idea that Kavod means Moshe. Now, there is a pasuk in Hosea that may point in the direction of those who see this as not the worship of an alternative god. Look at Hosea Perek Tet, which is pasuk Yud, which is right after the pasuk from Bereishis, on that third page of the handout. This is what Hosea says. Ka'anovim ba'midbar motzosi Yisrael. I found Israel like grapes in the desert. Kivikurov yisa'inov eresh yisara yisiyavo seichem. In other words, I saw your forefathers in a very positive light. Heim abol ba'al pa'or v'yinozru la'boshes v'yiyushi kutzim ke'ohavon. But then they came to Baal Peor and they dedicated themselves to this disgrace. They became abominable as they had previously been beloved. I once found myself when I was in college I was at Columbia for some reason, I met a friend of mine from Camp Mossad, who was in JTS, and he told me he's going into a class in Hosea with H. L. Ginsberg, a very famous biblical scholar. I should come in, sit in on a class with him. So I did. He argued, Ginsberg did, that some of the prophets never heard of the Chet HaEgel. What's the proof? This was the most, there were three proofs. One was this pasuk. Everything was fine until they came to Baal Peor. What about the Egel? That was before Baal Peor. So the prophet didn't know about Baal Peor. Similarly, he said in Yirmiyahu, when it says that God loved the Jews, you know, because Lechtecha Charei Bamidbar Be'eretz Lo Zeruah, indicates that everything was fine in the desert. So he also didn't know about the Chet HaEgel. And then he said, there's another verse in Hosea, Yud Gimel, which I reproduced here only because of the story of Ginsberg, not because there's anything really to do with this, I don't think. Kedaber Ephraim Reseis Nosohu Yisrael VeYashem Babal VeYomos. So he changed the Pasuk, and he turned Kedaber to Kizchor, and he turned Reseis to Toras, and he turned Nasi Nasa to Nasi, and he stuck in a word from an earlier Pasuk of Nevi'i, and he got a Pasuk that read, Kizchor Ephraim Toras Nevi'i. When Ephraim remembered the Torah of my prophet Moses, who was a Nasi b'Yisrael, then everything was fine until VaYashem Babal VaYomos. This also proves he never heard of Chet HaEgel. So I was sitting in the back of the room. I wasn't in the class officially. So I said that, you know, maybe this is because the Chet HaEgel was not the worship of an alternative God. Maybe this is an indication that it was not. And Baal Peor was the first case when they actually worshipped an alternative deity. And I was talking about the pasuk in Perek Tet, which was what he was teaching. So he said, "Aval mata seba pasuk hasheni," by which he meant the one in Yud Gimel. So I wasn't in the class. I have to worry about what mark he would give me. Maybe this wasn't nice. The class was conducted in Hebrew. So I said to him, "Ani madif lihitvakeach yisod pasuk shekayam, velo yisod pasuk shenenu kayam." You know, I prefer to discuss this with you on the basis of a pasuk that exists, and not on the basis of a pasuk that you made up. But in any case, without going to the one he made up, the pasuk in Perek Tet may actually be an indication that that Baal Peor was much more serious than the Chet HaEgel, and that is reinforced by the passage in Melachim Bet, Perek Yud, that you see just below. We don't really have time to read the whole thing, but this is an account of Yehu's purging of the northern kingdom of Israel of Baal worship. He comes after Achav and Izevel, not directly after Achav, but after Achav's son, and Izevel is still alive, and he purges the land of Baalism and of the Ovdei HaBaal, whom he kills. And then we get to Pasuk Kaf Ches, which summarizes what he did, and then goes on. Vayashmeid Yehu es HaBaal miYisrael. He destroyed the Baal from Israel, purged Israel of the Baal, of Baalism. Rak chatoe Yoravon ben Nevot asher hecheti es Yisrael lo sor Yehu me'acharehem. And what are those sins? Eglei HaZohov asher beisel v'asher bedot. I think it's very clear, even before you get to the next psukim, that the verses here distinguish between Baalism and the Agalim in a manner that regards Baalism as considerably more serious. And let's go on. Vayomer Hashem el Yehu, Yan asher hetivoso la'asos hayoshar be'enai k'chol asher bilvavi k'chol asher bilvavi osisa levei sachov b'nei rivi'im yeshvu l'cho al kisei Yisrael, because you did what was good in my eyes. But V'yehu lo shama l'leches b'soras Hashem Elokei Yisrael b'chol levavo. He was imperfect. Lo sar me'al chatos yaravo mashiach tis Yisrael. I don't think there's really any way to avoid the conclusion that there is a difference, and a pretty serious difference, between Baalism and the Agalim.
The motivation on the part of Yaravo and Avat was political.
Granted.
It was not theological.
That's right.
When Yehu leaves those things up there, I think it's also political. I don't want the Jews to go to Jerusalem. I want to stay here. So
it could be.
It's not clear that Yehovah Ben Avat ever really believed that those Agalim have any real...
Look, the question is, what did the masses believe? But that's basically right. I mean, they are. If the Agalim were seen as a full-fledged worship of other gods, I don't think you would see this rhetoric. And the truth is, even from the overall stories of Eliyahu, and Achav with the Nevi'ei HaBaal and all of that, I think it's very clear that, at least very clear is a strong, too strong. Those stories, I think, strongly suggest that Baalism was seen as more serious than the status quo of the Agalim themselves. We don't really have time to do the Rambam, except you can take a look at it. There's much, much to say about that Rambam, almost as much as there was to say about Nasa Adam B'Tzalmeinu. I leave you with what are, I think, two quite strong arguments on opposite sides of this question.
Thank you very much. Next week is Becker speaking, and then Rabbi Adler on Haggadah the following week, and the week after that, Rabbi Gottlieb, and then Pesach.